Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Today's trigger warnings are death and violence. And I have a Spotify comment.
Yay!
These both were left from Ellie, and she left one that says, "Guys, this is by far my fave podcast." And then she left another one, and it says, "On my life, I agree with y'all. The age kind of got me. But like, his past does explain why he's doing what he is. Overall, it was amazing. By the way, y'all are so funny. On my life." And that was on the God of Malice.
Trust her
one,
on so. Her life. We are funny.
Thank you for the validation, Ellie.
And this week, we're telling Riley all about Famine by Laura Thalassa, which is the third book in the Four Horsemen series. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I gave it 5 stars.
Woo!
I think that's a first for me.
Yeah, you're stingy with the 5 stars.
Yeah,
I am.
You do keep those close to your heart.
I do. It's got to really just blow me away.
I give everyone 5 stars. I just love reading. I gave it 5 stars.
Jenna's just happy to be here.
Actually, I almost didn't give it a 5-star, but the end really did it for me.
Yeah.
I also gave it 5 stars. This was a reread for me. The second time, I was like plowing through the whole series, so I gave the entire series a 4. But this time, I was like, this is so much better than the previous 2 books, which were still very good. This one was just, mwah, chef's kiss, mwah. All right, so this book is set in Brazil. And it's been 24 years since the Four Horsemen originally appeared on Earth. The town of Laguna is preparing offerings for the impending arrival of Famine to try and sway him to have some mercy. Anna doesn't think it'll do any good, but she stays with her people anyway. She recognizes the horseman as soon as he approaches because she's met him before. And this horseman's MO is a little bit different. He sends messengers to cities ahead of his arrival so the towns know to prepare their finest house, their finest rum, their finest clothing, and all of their gold, and they present it to him as an offering. Okay. And then he'll stay in the house and basically make these people his little servants.
Oh, okay.
The town follows him as he rides through and to the mayor's mansion. A few men break in and drag the mayor and his family out, kicking and screaming. Anna and her madam, whose name is Elvita, have a plan. While the men who dragged and presumably killed the mayor and his wife and children are doing something inside the mansion, Elvita tells Anna that it's time. As soon as Anna walks into the house, she sees Famine sitting there with his scythe in hand. So he has like a Grim Reaper scythe that he carries everywhere.
Yes, badass.
Oh, it's a little scary.
He is just the best horseman. I love him. It's clear that Famine doesn't recognize Anna, and Elvita says that she's brought him a gift. And Anna steps forward and says, "It's me. I'm the gift."
Oh.
Famine's like, "You, what could I possibly want with you?" And then he roasts her and says he can't even tell if she's a cow or a pig under all that makeup.
Yeah.
That would hurt my feelings.
I would cry and run away.
She tries to play sweet and says maybe she could warm his cold heart. And he's like, you're pathetic. I don't want your putrid flesh. But now you have my attention and that's not a good thing. Elvita steps forward and is like, no, my women are different. You'd love being inside one of them. And Famine is like, your women. So Anna is a lady of the night. She works in Elvita's brothel. And then Famine looks to Anna and says how terrible it must feel to be owned and used like property. He whispers to the men moving around the house to get rid of these two women with the others. As they're being dragged out, Anna screams at him that he should recognize her because she saved him. But he just fixes his gaze at the door behind her, and when they're finally brought outside, she sees a giant pit. And inside of the pit are the bodies of the townspeople. One of the men stabs Elvita over and over again until she dies, and then one of the other men stabs Anna.
Jesus.
They're both thrown into the pit. Elvita is dead, and Anna lays in the pit and closes her eyes and gives in to the darkness. But after a while, she feels a hand on her shoulder and a voice in her ear saying, live, and then her eyes open. She's weak and in pain, but not as badly as before. Until she coughs, then it's agony, because she got stabbed in the abdomen, so she's
fucked 11 times.
Was it 11 times?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Holy fuck.
She looks around and sees a bunch of disfigured dead bodies surrounding her, and as she looks harder, she sees some movement. There are some people who were buried alive in the pit. Now she's determined to live and get revenge. She finds the steps to the pool and drags herself across the corpses to get to them. On her way, she sees the mayor. He's barely alive and she considers saving him, but he grabs her hand and begs her to kill him. She's considering it when she sees Elvita's body and she goes over there. She's like, maybe she's alive too, but she's very clearly extremely dead. And now she tells herself that Famine must pay. She forces herself to walk home, but she notices that there are trees and vines growing everywhere, like out of the street. And she's like, I just walked here and there were not vines growing out of the street. So like, this is very strange. Very Jumanji.
What does Famine do?
You'll see.
Dang it, I want to know.
Everything is quiet except for the noise of a bunch of flies. And then she looks up and sees a bunch of bodies hanging from the branches. It's like the vines grabbed them and squeezed the life out of them. She gets back to the brothel and there's nobody there. It's covered in giant thorny bushes and there she sees the dead bodies of all of her coworkers. She forces herself to eat and drink from the kitchen and then goes to her room and passes out in her bed. She lays in bed for a week until her mind clears enough to tell herself that Famine fucked with the wrong bitch and she'll make him sorry for not making sure she was dead. She raids abandoned buildings and leaves town after him.
We'll see. We'll see if you can get him.
Oh, she'll get him. She travels for a full month before she catches up to him. So at this point, he's moved on to the next city. And she reaches the guarded house he's currently staying at. She sneaks around the back, and there's nobody alive in the house except Famine, who's sitting facing away from her. She grabs a knife and then grabs his hair, stabbing him in the neck, and says he fucked with the wrong girl. And he's like, oh, it's the whore who was offered to me before.
He said, oh, you're back?
She says, no, think further back. I saved you. It was raining. You were missing body parts. And then Famine's face falls as he remembers exactly how he met Anna 5 years ago when she was a teenager. She had come across a glowing and mutilated body in the road during a storm, and as she was walking away, she heard a groan. She goes back to the body, and it's missing both arms and both legs, and the abdomen is just completely flayed open.
Disgusting.
Yeah. She goes to the man and checks for a pulse, but the body's completely still. But then he suddenly whispers, help. She drags him off the road and into a nearby abandoned house. She sits with him and watches, but he's completely still. She dozes off and wakes up to a strange sound, and the horseman is looking around all confused, and she tells him he's safe and she's not going to hurt him. He asks why she's helping him, and she says it's what any decent person would have done. He lays his head on her lap as she soothes him through the agonizing pain he's in. The night gets cold, and he asks her to lay with him, so she does. She asks him his name, and he says, Famine, and I'm here to kill you all. And then he starts hysterically laughing and crying at the same time. Like, he's having a little menti bee. She comforts him, telling him it's gonna be okay. And he calms down and says that he was captured, but now that he's free, he's going to take his revenge. She takes in his body and realizes that he's completely regenerated, and he's really hot.
Of course.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
When it's light out, he brings her into town where his horse is waiting for him, but is immediately shot with a bow and arrow. His captors set a trap for him, and then vines appear out of the ground, grabbing and killing all of his attackers. The townspeople are frozen in fear, and he says for years he's been imprisoned and tortured, but nobody did anything to help, and now they must suffer. Then the vines come back full force, and everybody is annihilated. Anna starts to scream and asks if anyone was left alive, and he says, yes, you.
Wow.
Then he's like, let's go, and she says she's not going anywhere with him. He promises he won't hurt her, but she's like, stay the fuck away from me, because he just killed an entire town.
Yeah. I feel like anybody in their, like, right mind would be like, oh my gosh, never mind.
He uses his vines to pluck her a flower and says he won't leave her and begs her to get on his horse, but she says, fuck you and fuck your flower. So he relents and gets on the horse saying, goodbye, little flower. I will not soon forget your kindness. And he rides off. And that's their little meet cute. That's how they met.
That is a little meet cute.
Yeah.
Just saved his dismembered body. Like, it's
and then
cute.
He, like, killed all of humankind.
Yeah, and he's like, let's go, bitch.
Honestly, she's very brave because I don't think I would approach a dismembered body. I feel like my fear would hold me back.
But what if it was glowing?
Nope. Once again, my fear is like, don't go over there. Don't touch that.
Now that Famine remembers, he says he's glad she survived, but she still has the knife to his throat. And he says, do it, flower. And she says, don't call me that. Then the vines in the floor start to writhe and she trips, thrusting the knife into his chest on accident. He calls her a foolish little flower and rips the blade out. She tries to escape, but of course she's unsuccessful.
I feel my cheeks flush with anger, even as the horror of my situation sets in. Fuck you. The horseman presses his boot down harder against me. You tried that already, remember? I still don't want your pussy.
Stop it.
Yes, you do.
She tells him he took everyone from her, and he's like, yeah, that's what I do. He hauls her to a dark room and ties her up, telling her that once again, he is sparing her, and she's being subdued until she's done trying to kill him. As he leaves, he says she should have stayed away. She may be the same little flower, but he's not known for letting flowers grow. He leaves her down there for the night and wakes her up rudely in the morning, which does not put her in a great mood. That's like the worst way to start a day, is just like being woken up not gently.
Mm-hmm.
He slices her wrist bindings and tells her she smells like blood and shit. And she's like, I really don't care what you think about me. So
he's so like brash. Like, I would literally cry every single day.
I know. Yeah. Takes a strong woman for a man like this.
And she is strong. I think she's one of my, like, favorite female characters that we've ever had.
Yeah.
She's, like, super funny.
She is very funny. And she's, like, she has no shame.
None.
Nope.
Oh, I love
she's
that.
She's like, yeah, I'm a sex worker. Fuck you.
She asks if he's decided on whether or not he's going to kill her, and he tells her the fact that she's still alive should be all the answer she needs. He leads her to a fancy-ass bathroom with a clawfoot tub and tells her to wash up because she reeks.
I'd be like, okay.
God, I get it.
Me already.
He makes no move to leave, so she just starts undressing in front of him. When he sees her wounds from when she was thrown into the pit, he sucks in a sharp breath and comments on it, saying those don't look survivable. She doesn't answer and just gets in the tub, not bothering to cover herself to get a reaction out of the horseman. He asks what she'd do if he let her go free, and she's like, I don't know, probably try and kill you again.
Just being honest.
He says he figured as much. He tells her they're leaving tomorrow and no funny business or she's not getting food. She thinks to herself that he's gonna feed her and keep her sheltered in nice-ass houses and isn't going to kill her, and tells him that he has a very willing captive.
She's like, I'll fuck you.
This whole time, she's like, I would fuck you. 100%.
Yeah, yeah. She always makes, like, sexual
jokes.
And
he's like, leave me alone.
He's like, I don't want to. Stop.
She does wind up trying to escape before they head out, mostly out of boredom. So she's just so bored from sitting locked in this bedroom that she's like, I'm gonna try and get out of here and see what happens. But she's obviously caught. She's sitting in the room that Famine gave to her, reading through some spicy love letters that were left behind, when Famine walks in with a papaya and she's like, what is that? I'm a human, not a bird. Get me some real food.
You are a human-shaped headache, he mutters. What a compliment to headaches everywhere. Do you ever stop talking? Only if you put something in my mouth, they say. I'm partial to food, but dicks work too.
Put your dick in her mouth.
Do it.
He tells her to eat or go hungry, but to be in the stables in 5 minutes. When she meets him, he's getting his horse ready and pulls out iron manacles, saying if she's going to act like a prisoner trying to escape, he's going to treat her like one. He puts them on her, lifts her on her horse, and she notices her horse is tied to one of the horses of one of his guards. She asks the man where they're going, and he tells her to shut the fuck up, but Famine is like, do not speak to her.
Yeah.
Then the ground starts to rumble. He tells
tells the men they've been very helpful, but they must die, and the vines come up, grabbing all the guards off their horses and crushing their bones until they're dead. He gets off his horse and goes to Anna and says, "Come, flower," and lifts her off her horse and onto his. And she's like, "Why would you go through the trouble of, like, having a horse prepared for me and then killing everyone and moving me onto your horse?" And he's like, "Ah."
Does he kill the horses?
No. No.
He never kills any of the animals.
No, he's very kind to the animals. He has the ability to, like, calm them down in stressful situations, too. Like, he's always, like, soothing the animals.
Good.
After a while, her boots start to get uncomfortable, so she tries getting them off, but it's hard because her wrists are bound, and she's on a horse, and they wind up falling to the ground. Famine doesn't stop, and she's like, "Those were my only shoes." And he's like, "Oh, well." So now she doesn't have any shoes.
I mean, shouldn't have kicked him off, I guess.
But they were hurting her.
They were her only shoes.
Keep them on.
They continue on their way, and Anna notices that all of the crops around them wither and die while the wild plants grow tall. Famine says this land doesn't belong to the humans, so he's taking it back. He tells her that he does have a problem. He doesn't know how to feed her when he's trying to kill all these crops, but all the humans need to die. So the only way he has to feed her is to, like, grow her food, but he doesn't want to give her the crops because then it's kind of like the humans are winning because they planted the crops.
That makes sense. You know, I add, you'd probably be much less bloodthirsty if you banged your aggression out. I don't want to be less bloodthirsty, and I definitely don't want to bang you. I wasn't offering, though I'm sure you could find someone open to the idea. Probably not a living someone, but still, someone. You say that as though you didn't throw yourself at me mere weeks ago, he says, sounding exasperated. I didn't throw myself at him. Anna da Silva doesn't throw herself at anyone. She coyly lures the unwitting into her sex den and enslaves their wills to hers for a time. I was blinded by memories of a nicer famine, I say, and I have been blinded by memories of a nicer, less sexual version of you. I raise my eyebrows, an unwilling smile spreading across my face. I didn't realize my sexuality mattered to you. He growls, "Will you be quiet?" "Only if you put something in my mouth. Dicks are still an option," I say, just to taunt him. "I thought you weren't offering," he says. I open my mouth to argue, but oh, he's right. "I might make an exception just this once," I say. "For the sake of humanity, of course. A blowjob to end all bloodshed." That sounds appropriately valiant. It really does. A horseman brought to his knees when a human got down on hers.
Suck a stick.
Do it. She keeps offering, and he's like, "No." He sighs and is like, "Fucking fine, get off the horse." And she's like, "Oh shit, do I actually have to suck his dick now?" And she's scared, but intrigued. She reaches for his pants and he's like, "What are you doing?" And she says, if he's shy, they can take it slow. And he's like, "Oh my God, stop."
He's like, "Not what I meant."
He then points at a patch of earth that's growing a tree before their very eyes. It grows and grows until it's mature and fills with fruit. And he says, "There's some food now. Stop talking about sex for like 5 seconds. And Anna's like, "Cool, but also, damn."
Yeah.
They travel until they get to the next city, and Famine kills everyone with his vines along the way. He tells the townspeople to get him their finest house and any good men willing to help if they don't want the worst of his wrath. They bring him and Anna to a nice house and introduce him to the owners, who are promptly decapitated with his scythe. He orders the stunned humans watching to bring dinner and entertainment if they want to keep their lives. He brings Anna to a separate room and removes her cuffs, and she's like, "Why?" And he says she has nowhere to run, and if she tries to hurt him again, she'll pay the price. Besides, she can't really go back to her empty whorehouse and sell herself to dead men, and he thinks she lacks the courage to try, and so she smacks him in the face. He laughs and calls her foolish, bringing thorned vines out of the ground to cage her, and leaves her alone in the room, completely trapped. She spends the rest of her night cutting herself up to get free. The next day, she's summoned to a drunk Famine. He puts the cuffs back on her and forces her to stand at his side as he speaks to the humans who bring him offerings. One man comes up and offers his teenage daughter. Anna is appalled, and Famine is like, "What do you think, Anna? Should I fuck her?" And she calls him a monster. He says he'll spare the girl and orders her to be put in his bedroom, and the father is dragged out to the pits. Anna gets an idea and decides to plop herself down on Famine's lap so she can try and irk him in any way she can. But he's cruel to a man who offers up his family's only heirloom and is dragged away, so Anna gets up and storms out. She waits in her room until she's summoned for dinner. Famine orders her to entertain him, and when she tells him to go fuck himself, a guard backhands her. And then Famine stabs the shit out of him and tells the rest of the men not to touch her. He orders her to sit and eat, and she hesitantly does. He forces her to talk about
why she got into sex work. And she's like, what, you want to learn how to play hide the salami? And he's like, what the fuck are you even talking about right now? And he says what he really wants to know is why she went to go join a brothel instead of leaving with him. She says she couldn't go with him knowing he was going to kill everyone they came across. And he's like, maybe I am evil. I was made in your image after all, and storms out of the room. The next morning, it's time to leave, and Anna asks about the girl from the day before. He says she's alive for now and won't elaborate. As they ride off, the sky darkens and a swarm of locusts take over the city.
Hell no.
As they ride, Anna tries to make conversation, and Famine is getting increasingly annoyed. And she's like, okay, let's trade compliments. You are very hot, and you have a nice smile. And then she starts to ask about how he doesn't have to pee or poop. And he's like, oh my God, stop.
She just annoys him.
I know, but Famine, open up. What else are you going to do?
He says, will you stop if I give you a compliment? You have a nice voice. There's your compliment.
I feel an unexpected flush of warmth at his words. I tilt my head in confusion. But I thought you wanted me to stop talking. I say, about me. Talk your ass off about anything else. I'm sitting here with a man who says he's not actually a man, riding a horse that might not actually be a horse. He's a horse. And I'm supposed to not talk about any of it. Precisely. There's a long pause. Fine. I guess that leaves me to talk about sex. Moist, thick, wet sex. Another beat of silent passes. Would you like another compliment?
He's like, please shut the fuck up.
He's like, ma'am, I think you're a sex addict.
The day turns to night and Famine refuses to stop so she can sleep. So she's like, fine. And then she snuggles up against him on the horse and falls asleep. She wakes up in a bed and Famine is there and is like, you drooled on me, so I found you a bed. And she's like, oh my God, you tucked me in?
Sweet.
And he's just like, oh my God, come on, let's go. As she walks out of the room, she slips on a blood puddle and lands next to the corpses of the homeowners. And she's like, oh fuck. And she tries to book it. But Famine chases her and tackles her down, and she begs him to just let her go or let her die, and he says no. So they take off on the horse again. That night, she's complaining about being tired and hungry again, and Famine is like, okay, fine, and then stops at a house, kicking down the door. Anna tries to be like, okay, never mind, let's go, but there's an old woman standing there screaming. Famine raises his scythe to kill her, but Anna pushes the woman out of the way, and he accidentally slices Anna in the shoulder instead. The woman runs out of her home, and Famine rips Anna's dress off to assess her wounds. Like, full titties out, just rips her dress.
Hot.
He cleans and wraps her wound with supplies from the house and finds her a new dress, telling her that he didn't mean to hurt her. He asks why she'd save that woman, because she wouldn't have gotten the same treatment in return. And she's like, I helped you once and you wouldn't have helped me. And he doesn't have a response.
Got him.
He lays her down in a bed and starts pacing loudly, so Anna is like, oh my God, stop. And she grabs his arm and is like, just lay down with me and quit doing that. She starts taking off his armor and he's like, what are you doing? And she tells him to chill out. She's not trying to deflower him. She gets him to open up about himself, and he tells her that he's the most inhuman out of all of his brothers. He has more in common with the clouds and the wildfires than he does with humans, and every second stuck in this form is agony. He just wants this to be over so he can go back to what he was before. He gets up to walk away and says, another inhuman thing about me, flower. I don't simply exist. I hunger. The next day they're off, and Anna found some new boots at the house. He opens up about how he came to be captured. He spared a family who was kind to him. He stayed with them for too long, and the town found out. The whole family was butchered, even their young children. And then he was captured. He was tortured, disfigured, disemboweled, over and over and over again. After that, his task became personal, because he was angry. He stops to redress her shoulder, and she just has to take her whole dress off, so she's just standing there in literally only her granny panties. He pours alcohol on it and rips a chunk of his own shirt off to bandage it, and she's like, this is strangely kind. She takes a swig of the bottle, and they get back to the house, and she doesn't know if it's the alcohol or Famine, but she's kind of starting to enjoy his company.
So they ride into the next big city, and there are people lining the streets cheering and welcoming him. There's a family of three, and Anna knows he's about to kill them, and she's like thrashing, begging him to stop, and Fami is pissed that she's undermining him. He is like, don't ever beg me to stop in front of people. This is embarrassing.
Fami.
Pesty and Fami.
Poor War. He doesn't get anything.
Warthaniel.
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 Warthio.
Warthio. I love Warthio. Death can be Dathaniel.
I love it. Yeah.
Dathaniel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
He tells his men to round up the city and put them all in a big building because he wants a celebration in his honor. He drags Anna inside a bedroom and told her to wait there. And she's like, absolutely not going to happen. You'll have to make me. And he's like, bet. And he literally took her mom nightgown that she's wearing and ripped it from the bottom into four strips and then like ties her to the bed. But he's being very gentle on her bad shoulder.
How sweet.
He tells everyone in the house, if they even look at her door, he'll gut them and feed them their intestines. He finally comes back and throws a gown on the bed and tells her to put it on. She fights him every step of the way, but he, like, literally rips her mom nightgown straight down the middle now. So, like, her tits are just out, and she has nothing else to wear. And she's like, I will go naked. I'm literally a prostitute. Like, showing my body's my job. I don't care. But then when he threatens her boots that she just got that, like, actually finally fit her, she finally relents and puts the dress on.
Not the boots.
She noticed that he left his dagger on the bed, so on their way out, she grabs it real quick and tucks it into her boot. They get outside and one of the guards is looking at her, and Famine tells the man, unless he wants a dress too, to stop eye-fucking her. And Anna's like, Pookie, are you jealous? And he denies it one too many times. It just makes her smile the rest of the way because she knows that he's low-key jealous.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
They get to the building with all the townspeople, and it's basically like a ball. There's food, there's music, and he tells everyone to eat, dance, and be merry. It's the super forced. So he tells Anna that that includes her, and she says that she can't dance by herself. So he reaches out his hand for her, and they start dancing. In this moment, they're totally gazing into each other's eyes, and she's super swept up by the moment and by his beauty. But then the song ends, and Famine calls on his demon plant things, and everyone is screaming. The guards barricade the door so no one can leave.
Jesus.
He's like, that was sweet, but now I must kill everyone.
That sounds so scary.
Yeah.
Just like the earth shaking and these vines coming up.
Yeah.
No.
But they have like huge ass like thorns and stuff on them, and they just like impale you and like tangle you up in them.
No.
Anna knows she has to stop him, so she takes the dagger from her shoe and walks right up to him and stabs his hand as hard as she can. When Famine looks at her, she expects to see anger, but all she saw was betrayal. And he was like, that was a mistake. And then he takes one of his plants and like pulls her up into the air, squeezing her super tight. He walks up to this random guy and he's like, what would you give to make me stop? And the guy's like, anything. And Famine says, your life for theirs. But the man doesn't answer. He doesn't move to his knees, nothing. And Famine takes that as answer enough and then just beheads the man. And then the woman next to him and the next person until they're all either beheaded or killed by his plants.
Ugh.
He just says, death to all. Pop, pop, pop. Die, die, die. They're home now, and they get into her room, and instead of him leaving, he shuts himself in with her. They have, like, a really heated discussion, and Anna tells him that she was raped and had to endure pain, too, but she's not out there killing everyone. And although Famine sympathizes with her, he's still dead set on killing. And she's crying at this point, and he, like, gently wipes the tears away. He takes her into the living room in front of the fireplace and gently tends to her injuries. He pauses, cleaning her wounds to take off his wet armor, and he takes off his shirt, too, and she sees the glowing green tattoos.
Oh, the glowing tattoos.
Yeah, he's tatted, baby. He starts translating his tattoos for her in the angelic language, and it basically says that everything he's doing is of God's will. So he vulnerably tells her that he's made to be the cruel one, and out of pestilence and war, he's the worst. She's like, what about death? And he says, nothing is worse than him. It's the next morning, and she's making coffee, and Famine actually, like, makes a sex joke to her for, like, the first time, and she's like, pause, is this real life? And then he also asks her to pour a cup of coffee for him, and she's like, who are you and what have you done with the cranky murdering Famine? She realizes that, like, once she was vulnerable and told him that piece of her past, of the pain that she had to go through, he's changed towards her. This time when she's tired, she doesn't want to stop because she doesn't want him killing someone for their house, but he's like, I have a surprise, and pulls up to, like, the most broken down abandoned house known to mankind. But the one small mercy is that it's empty.
He said, I didn't have to kill anyone.
Just like roaches.
Yeah.
There's just like rat shit all over the place. He sits down on the ground and she lays down next to him, putting her head in his lap.
"What are you doing?" he demands. "Calm your tits," I say, settling in. "I'm not trying to steal your virginity. You just happen to be the cleanest thing in this house."
Lay on him.
He tells her on the subject of sex, humans just don't do it for him. He just wanted to clear up the air because she always brings up sex with him, but she's like, "I'm not going to stop trying. I will get you to fuck me."
He said, "I fuck animals."
He doesn't. He does not say that.
"I fuck plants." "I fuck holes in trees."
Famine plays with her hair. He's super hesitant at first. And then he tells her the story of Maat, the ancient Egyptian goddess of harmony and justice. She was a winged woman who wore an ostrich feather in her hair, which represented the true straight path. Justice, peace, harmony. And when you died, if your heart weighed less than a feather, you would go to a peaceful afterlife. And if it weighed more, your heart would be fed to a beast and you'd be stuck wandering forever. She's like, "Okay, weird story, but why do you like it?" He ominously says that if she thinks about it long enough, she'll figure it out. She woke up the next morning with her head still on Famine's lap and he's like, "Fucking finally." He did not move an inch all night long because she was sleeping like a sweet baby angel.
He says, "I'll just stay here. Can't feel my toes, but it's fine."
She wanted to hear about how he wasn't a virgin and he's like visibly annoyed, and then it starts raining and she's like, "Fine, if you're not gonna talk to me about how you lost your virginity, then let's talk about the fact that you probably care about me since you let me sleep so peacefully last night." And the rain got harder and she's like thinking in her head, "Can you control the weather?" So she pushes him further and she's like, "You do care about me, don't you?" Now it's like hardcore raining and she's like, "Holy fuck. One, he cares about me. Two, he can control weather." The horseman gets off of his horse and starts stalking away, and it's completely downpouring now, so she runs after him.
Oh, romancy.
It's raining. What's gonna happen?
Like The Notebook.
Yeah.
I reach out and touch his cheek, for once not restraining my baser impulses. Just as he's beginning to rear back, surprised and a little horrified, my hand goes around his neck and I pull his head towards me. Lifting to my tiptoes, I press my lips to his and kiss him.
It is like The Notebook.
Cute!
At first, he's stiff, but then he starts kissing her back. And a bolt of lightning cracks down from the heavens and scares the shit out of her. She yelps, which ends the kiss. She's in a great mood until she realizes that they were going into a huge city now and he's about to destroy it. She's like awestruck by the beautiful skyscrapers because she's never seen them before, and Famine pulls her out of her trance by telling her that she is not to ever kiss him again and to basically have her swear on it. She's like, "No, that's not gonna happen. I'm not agreeing to that." Just because she loves fucking with him, she grabs his hand and like threads her fingers in between his and lifts his hand up to her mouth and starts kissing his hand like all over.
Oh.
And he's like, "Please stop." Then the unease sets in because it's basically like a huge city and there's skyscrapers everywhere, but she hasn't run into any people. And she asks Famine if he thinks that this is going to be a city where the people try to attack him. And he's like, "Yeah, probably."
He said, "Used to it."
They get to the biggest house in the city. And as they pull up, she sees dismembered bodies all over the place, hanging on sticks, hanging from the house, from posts, and she throws up everywhere. And it's when they get closer that she realizes that those are all Famine's men. It's clearly a setup now. She realizes that the house that they're at is like a drug cartel house. One guy tries to shoot an arrow right at Anna's chest, but Famine catches it right before it hits her, and he's like, "Oh, hell no. No one touches my woman." The owner of the drug cartel comes out of the house, and he starts clapping slowly like a little evil man. His name is Mr. Rocha. I can't pronounce his first name, so I'm not even going to try.
I think it's Hater.
I was saying Hater.
Hater. You could say Hater. Hater.
It's H-E-I-T-O-R. Hater.
Well, I call him Mr. Rocha. And he's basically telling Famine that he's pretty much famous because he's a Southeastern cartel, and anything Famine will want, he can get him. And Famine stupidly decides to take him up on the offer instead of killing him right away. He makes Anna walk up to his side and he tells everyone that this is their house now, and Mr. Rocha will basically be their servant. Mr. Rocha looks at Anna and he's like, "Who is this?" And the horseman says, "It's someone important."
Important.
Mr. Rocha guides Anna to her room, and when they get there, he's being a sleazeball and grabs her ass and is like, "Enjoy your room." And because she's sassy. She tells him, "You really think that ass grab is going to get me off?" And he's like, "You'll know when I get you off, and it's going to be soon." At dinner, Anna was going to leave because she's still so pissed off about Mr. Rocha, and she told Famine that if this is going to work between them, then there has to be respect. And he said, "Normally, I don't do respect for any humans, but for you, I can make an exception." She sits back down, and they get in another fight, and this time, she's just fuming. She's just, like, over men telling her what to do, and she's just over everything. So she picks up her wine glass and chucks it at the wall, and then takes a tablecloth and yanks it so hard the food goes everywhere. Famine is like, "Hell yeah, girl, get angry." And he's like getting horny. He grabs her hand and walks her to his room, and she's looking around at his room, and he starts taking his armor off, and she's like, "Fuck yes, I want to jump his bones.
Do it."
In his room, she noticed his scale. And think of like the justice system symbol, you know, like those little scales that have like the little circle plates on either side.
Yeah.
He tells her that it's for weighing people's hearts, and she's like, "Do you want a demonstration?" So he takes a dagger and puts it on her finger and puts a little bit of her blood on the scale. She's pretty much even, but one side is a little bit lower, and she's like, "What does it mean?" And he tells her, "You're decently a good human. You saved me, but you also did try to kill me." She wants to see what his blood looks like, so he puts his blood on it, and it literally went straight to the ceiling like he's super, super good. And he tells her that he's cruel, but his heart is still pure. She faces him then and starts trying to undo her shirt, and he grabs her hand, and he's like, "Stop. Like, I'm not gonna fuck you."
Ugh.
He tells her that he's consumed by her because of the things that she's endured, and there's so much connection between the two of them. But before anything happens, there's a knock at the door, and she, like, remembered that Mr. Rocha is there, and she stiffens. He can tell that there's something that she's not telling him, so she knows that he won't stop until she says something, so she tells him about the ass squeeze. And his jaw clenches, and he's like, "Be right back. I'm about to go cut his hands off."
Yep, do it. Kill him.
She goes back to her room instead of staying in Famine's because she doesn't want to wait for him, and she ends up falling asleep. She wakes up to her bedroom door rattling. She's able to see when the door is slightly opens that it's Mr. Rocha with a blade. She grabs the metal candle holder, and right as he's about to reach for her throat, she swings and hits him. She misses his face, but is able to get the weapon out of his hand, and then she swings and swings again until he's unconscious. She runs straight to Famine's room, and she hears Mr. Roach's men talking about them torturing Famine. She finally reaches the front yard and sees all of his men in a circle and hears them laughing, and there's just a bunch of wet, clunky noises, and she realizes that they're killing him.
No, Famine.
Not our Fammy. They all leave and ditch Famine when they realize that Mr. Rocha is hurt and Anna's missing, so she takes that time to run to him. He's inside of a wagon in literal pieces, and there's an arrow straight through his head.
Jesus.
A guy from the horse stable starts running towards her, and she took the knife that she stole from Mr. Rocha and stuck it right in his throat, and then gets on the horse and is able to get Famine to an abandoned field to safety. She takes care of his injuries and realizes that Famine is the only one who's ever truly cared for her, and she's the only one who's ever truly cared for him. Famine finally comes to, and it's literally breaking her heart seeing him in so much agonizing pain, and he has like a look of pure hopelessness in his eyes. She's telling him over and over again how sorry she is, and she's downright sobbing at this point because that's so sad to her. She tells him that she doesn't blame him for hating them. His arm, like what's left of it, comes around her, and she starts hearing him crying. And they're just like sobbing together. It's really sad.
Oh, that would scare me if he was touching me with his like bloody
his nub.
Stump.
Nub.
It just reminds me of like Deadpool.
Oh yeah.
With the baby legs.
Yeah.
I fucking hated that.
Eventually, once they're both done crying, she fills him in on everything. And when he realized that she fought and killed for him, he's like, "Why?" And she says that she likes him as much as he likes her. And they have the cutest heart-to-heart, and Famine tells her that she deserves so much more than what this life has to offer. And she strokes his face and says, "You do too."
And then he says, "Still not gonna fuck you."
He's playing hard to get. Just do it.
Please.
For the love of God.
The next morning, he's basically almost fully healed, and he is ready for revenge. They get to the house, and Famine unleashes everything. Picture this. The sky is black. There's thunder. There's monster plants everywhere. Famine's running through people like people run through hot dogs at a hot dog eating contest. And shit is wild right now.
Oh my God.
While Famine is killing everyone, some man attacks Anna and starts choking her. Anna stabs him in the side, but he only lets up for a second before it starts again. And before she could stab him again, Famine kicks the man off of him. He's seething, and there's a bunch of lightning strikes and thunder, and he tells the man, never, ever fuck with with what's mine, and then kills the man.
Yeah.
He scoops Anna up and asks if she's okay. She nods and she checks on him too, and he's like, now I'm okay. He gets to the wagon and they go to find Mr. Rocha, and boy, they find him. He uses his thorned bushes to subdue him, and instead of the plants killing him, he does to Mr. Rocha what he does to the crops, and he starts killing him from the inside out very slowly.
Tell me, evil man, what did you intend to do with her? Did you intend to recite her poetry? Another snap, another agonized cry. Or to pledge your loyalty to her? Another crack followed by a moan. Did you come to bring her food or clothing or shower her with praise? Snap, snap, snap. Hater is openly weeping. Or to tell her how unworthy of her time you were? Crack. No, you came to violate her, and my friend, we're both discovering that nothing strokes my rage like trying to harm my flower.
That is his flower.
Mr. Rocha isn't going to die soon, though. Famine promised to drag his death out as long as possible. After Famine is done killing everyone inside the mansion, Anna bathes in his room because he's like, you don't have a separate room, you're sharing mine now. And once she's out, she decides that she's going to take care of him. So she drags him to the bathroom and tells him to strip, which he does, and she is drooling at the sight of him. He feels super vulnerable that she's taking care of him, but accepts it, and he starts running his hands up and down her leg. Once he's dressed, he tells her to get some rest, and the next morning, she wakes up, and they have some drinks, and it dawns on her that she killed a man, and she starts downright sobbing. Famine takes her face in his hands and pleads with her not to cry. They almost kiss again, but don't! And we are being edged here, people. Like, at this point, I was like, this is the slowest burn ever. This is the point where I gave it like 4 stars because I was like, I'm dying over here.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's like our last book too. It was just so back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
At least he was like, yeah, you're my wife.
Yeah, but this time she's like, yeah, I'm gonna fuck you.
Yeah, come on.
Just do it already. Our man Fammy decides he's gonna serve our queen Anna today and picks her up and brings her to the dining room and brings her an assortment of food along with rum and wine. And he's gonna wine and dine our girl. He grabs the bottle of wine.
He meets my gaze, a sly smile on his lips, and then he grabs the bottom of my jaw. What are you? The horseman lifts the spice rum to my lips. This little flower is me serving you.
Serve her pussy.
He's like legit making her chug this bottle of rum. Like, he's not taking it away from her lips.
He said, get drunk.
It's just like legit pouring down her throat. And the whole time, their gazes are just locked on each other. When he finally takes it from her, he immediately brings it to his lips and drinks. He doesn't stop drinking either. Then he gets up and grabs more alcohol for them. They're wining and dining, and they're getting to know each other, asking each other questions about themselves, and she tells him that she can fuck a man half blind and wanted to know if he would like a demonstration. And he's like, that's very tempting, but in the last few days, my eyes were literally the only thing that was left standing, so let's keep it this way for now. He opens up to her about being held captive, and they straight up tortured him. He tells her that they didn't just break his body, but they broke his spirit too. He brings the alcohol to his lips, and she takes it from him, taking a swig herself. And she asked if he meant it when he said that alcohol washes away the memories of his sins. He sadly smiles, and then she says, maybe it will wash away this sin, and kisses him.
Yeah. Kiss, 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 kiss.
He doesn't react to the kiss at first, but then he pulls her onto his lap, making her straddle him. They pause, and she just tries to be like, okay, that was a mistake again. And he's like, no, it wasn't. We're going to do this. And after tonight, everything has to go back to the way it was tomorrow. She says, okay, deal. So they start kissing again until he grabs her hips and stands, taking her with him and pinning her to the wall. He continues to kiss her as he carries her and then rips her dress clean down the middle as she claws his armor off. They get him undressed and she asks for him to put her down so she can look at him.
My gaze moves lower over a muscled torso that God just gave him because for whatever reason, Famine has to go around looking like a babe while he kills us all. His torso tapers off to a slim waist and this is a well-endowed man. Well, he says. Is your primitive human brain satisfied, he says.
She says, yeah, yeah it is. That's a big dick.
He scoops her up and walks outside to set her down on the grass. He apologizes for her scars but tells her that she's very beautiful and then he kisses down her body. Just as he's about to eat her out, she's like, hang on, I am a sex worker. I have been with a lot of people and I want to let you know because STDs are a thing.
He's like a man of God.
An STD is not going to touch him. That is oddly
touching of you to worry about me, but for the love of your vengeful god, can I please kiss your pussy now? Kiss it!
Give me that pussy.
Give it a smooch.
It starts to drizzle as he eats her out, and she squirms, and he tells her to stop moving or it's going to get much more interesting. She does not stop, and then the ground trembles as vines shoot out and bind her wrists and legs so she can't move.
I had a feeling. Had a feeling that was going to happen.
He goes back to eating her out and adds the finger, and she tells him that he's a kinky freak. She comes, and then he starts kissing back up her body, and when they're face to face, he asks if she's going to behave now. She says yes, but she wants to touch him, so the vines disappear, and he kind of just sits there, like, awkwardly, so he's like, so? She starts to take control. She tells him to lay back and goes between his legs and puts him into her mouth to give him a little BJ.
I use every trick I have on him, from swirling my tongue around the sensitive head of his cock, to cupping his balls, to even pressing a finger into his ass, the last one of which causes him to jerk against me. Jesus fucking Christ, he swears. What sort of witchcraft is this? You like a little finger in your butthole?
She ignores him and continues what she's doing, but he tells her to stop if they want to do more. She's like, gonna keep doing what I'm doing. So she continues until he finishes. He pulls her up to face him and tells her that she is way more devious than he realized. He runs his hands down her back and goes rigid when he feels all her scars. So he's never really paid attention to her when she's like undressing, because he was just like, get away from me, like shut the fuck up. So her whole back is covered in scars, and she says that they're from her aunt. So she grew up with her aunt, who used to beat her for like no reason and like take like a switch to her back. He turns her around to look at them and is appalled that someone she supposedly loves would do that to her. She quietly admits that she's thankful that him and his brothers are killing everyone off. She hates humanity but also wants them to be redeemable. Before they can keep continuing to talk about how morally great everyone is, he tells her that he's done talking about it and wants to eat her out.
Wow, again.
Again. She wakes up sore and hungover and vomits everywhere in the bathroom. She gets dressed and eats a little bit of food that he left for her, and she's like, I cannot believe that we did that. When he gets back to the room, he's like, what's wrong with you? Because he doesn't get hungover.
Yeah.
She asks if they had sex last night, and he's like, you don't remember? And she's like, no.
No shit.
They did not have sex last night.
Boo.
And he starts to be nice to her, and she's like, what about our agreement? He says, fine, you have an hour, and then we have to leave. After that, he's distant, and she regrets saying anything. But before they leave, he says that he wants to be a little naughty. He has a plant come from the ground, capturing her into like another cage thing. And then it produces one single rose that has smoky lavender petals. And it's the same flower from when they first met. He plucks it and tells the plant to like, okay, let her go. And it recedes back to the earth as he passes her the flower. He tells her that when he's around her, he feels the urge to create instead of destroy.
That's cute.
They continue their traveling, and she notices that everything is already dead. Fields, plants, cities that they pass, and he's like, yeah, I got a little carried away after a hater. I just started destroying everything. She admits to herself that she's kind of fallen in love with him. He senses that her mood shifts, and he stops a horse and asks her what's wrong. She tries to tell him that nothing's wrong, but he knows her better than that and tells her that he'll just learn soon enough.
How could you not, like, fall in love with these men, though?
I know.
I understand they're, like, going around and, you know, kill, kill, kill. But they're so hot. Yeah, they're so hot, and you're spending, like, 24/7 with them. And, like,
Stockholm syndrome.
Even these, like, intimate moments. Yeah, exactly. I would fall in love. Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Also, everyone's dying. So I'm like, I'm just going to stick with you.
Yeah.
She doesn't have anyone.
Yeah. Everyone's dying. I'm just going to be alive with you then.
Sure. That's kind of what she's doing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, he feeds me. He clothes me. He puts me in nice houses. I'm going to stick with him.
Yeah. But all the other girls, I feel like, were like, I have to get away.
Killing.
The other girls had families, though.
That's true.
She has no one.
That's true. True, true. Good point. Good point.
But still, either way, I'm staying with him.
I do feel like
fuck your families.
Famine is definitely like the most cruel out of all of them. Like, oh, I was just like, oh my God, like, how the fuck is she still with this guy at first? Because I would literally be so depressed and cry every single day because she has to watch people get murdered by the hundreds every day. That is some trauma.
Yeah. Right. And also I say, like, I would stay with him. I'd probably, like, find a knife and just kill myself.
Yeah, same.
In all honesty, I'd probably just be like, no,
if they let you.
Yeah.
True.
I'd find any way to die.
Or fuck.
Yeah.
True.
I don't know. I don't know if I could fuck in a moment like this, though.
Moto Casino. America. Like a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
They make it to an abandoned house to stay in for the night, and he packed her a blanket and food, and she is like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I do love him because he's taking care of me. He makes her a bed on the floor, and she says thank you, and he's like, are you ready to tell me what's been going on? And she's like, nope. He says, okay. They share her little floor bed that she makes from her blanket, and she's trying not to like get weird about them sharing a bed since they're supposed to like go back to the way they are, but she also has feelings for him now. He tells her he lied when he said it would go back to the way it was before. He can't ignore the ways that she has saved him and how it feels when they touch each other. He sees the same feeling reciprocated in her eyes, and he's like, that's why you've been quiet today.
You love me. He catches my chin and pulls my face closer, leaning in until only a few short centimeters separate our lips. Little flower, I'm happy to give you an encore of last night, he says, his voice low.
Do it.
Encore, encore.
Yeah.
She admits to him that this isn't a casual sex thing for her, and she isn't sure how to handle it. He says, okay, pause on the sex then. How about a head scratch and a story, and then I'll let you go to sleep.
God, I love a head scratch.
He tells her of when he met one of his brothers here on Earth. He met War on the beach in Greece and was told to leave this part of the world so War and his family would be safe. She's shocked by this, and he's like, oh yeah, they both have a wife and a family. She asks how this is possible, and he's like, they gave up all their powers to be with the women, so they're mortals now.
You do it too, Fammy. Do it.
She asks if he has kids, and he's like, no. And we learn that he is, I feel like him and War have way more powers than Pesty does, because he obviously controls the weather. He can like soothe animals. He grows and kills plants. But like he did with Hater, he can also grow and kill organs and stuff like that. So he can essentially prevent conception. So he's never had the issue of getting a human woman pregnant.
He's like built in birth control. We love that.
He is.
After a moment, she asks if his brothers still kill people. And he's like, no, they stopped at whatever point. He's not sure when, but they don't do that anymore. And then he lets her go to sleep. She wakes up to a loud bang and a woman holding a bow and arrow trained on her. The house has highwaymen in it, and they drag her up and out into the rain, asking where the other person is. She's still half asleep and confused, but they say, you came with another person. Where are they? She's like, I have no idea. You just woke me up. Don't know where they are. So the guy punches her in the face and spits on her when she hits the ground.
Ugh.
They're like, you know what? Let's take what we can and just kill her. As one goes to grab her, she kicks him and rolls away from his blade, but he ends up pinning her to the ground and puts the knife to her throat. She then sees Famine step from the shadows with his scythe at his side. The female bandit takes off running when she sees him, but he throws it and decapitates her.
Yeah.
He like boomerangs it. It's like,
The man on top of her starts to slice her throat, and she pushes him away, but then a huge thorn plant flings him off of her. Famine steps up to her, and she notices the violence behind his eyes and the panic. She says that she thinks she's okay, and then looks to see the two remaining bandits dead in the plants. He cups her face and says now he definitely doesn't want things to go back the way they were before, and he kisses her. Knowing that he saved her and would again if it came down to it, she lets all her walls down and accepts the fact that she loves him. She kisses him urgently, and when he brushes a hand down her neck, she like winces, and he knows that she's more hurt than he realized. He takes her back inside to inspect her wounds, and she's like, it's not that bad.
I'm trying to get dig down.
And he's like, no, I need to look at this. And she says, no, we're doing this. She twists his arm and they get undressed. And then he promises by the end of the night that she will forget every single way that she was mistreated before she met him. He kneels before her and kisses down her body.
Famine's fingers move to my core. The moment they touch, a naughty smile teases his lips. And here I thought I'd have to ready you, he says, running his finger around my entrance.
He removes his fingers and she feels his dick at her entrance. He looks her in the eyes as he slowly pushes into her while tucking her hair behind her ear. She starts to cry over this because of how sweet the gesture extras and tells him everything about this moment is too good to be true. He kisses her again and tells her he sees her and only her as he thrusts in and out of her, picking up the pace. They both finish, and then they spend the rest of the night getting lost in each other's bodies. She wakes up to a frantic famine and sees that everything is covered in blood. He panics, saying he thought she said she was fine or he wouldn't have done what they did last night. And she's like, I'm okay. She's not good.
She's like, I am kind of woozy though.
He tells her that they need to find her doctor, and she's like, no, all I need is needle, thread, and liquor. That's what I did for my ab wounds. They clean her up as best as possible and get back on the road. They approach a trading post to get the supplies, and he again is like, we should actually go to a doctor. Like, this is a bad idea. But she's like, I already told you I got this. Did you not see that I took care of my previous stab wounds just fine?
I mean, she was stabbed 11 times, so. She was, but I can't remember if it's death or, like, actually God.
It doesn't
But
say.
She was dying.
One of them brought her back.
That's Someone brought right. her back. Because she was dying, and then That's something right. was like, you live now.
I wish they said who.
We might find out in the last book, but the way that this book ends, I want to say it wasn't death.
I don't think it was. She looks at the cut in the mirror and chugs some liquor, telling Famine that she actually might not be able to do it. So this one, she's like, okay, that's pretty bad. I don't know about this.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she has him pour rubbing alcohol on it instead and wrap it up as best as possible. They stay the night in the trading post, and when she wakes up, she's feverish and knows that she's absolutely not okay. She looks at it again to clean it, and she can tell that there are early signs of infection. So they clean it up and wrap it again, and Famine says, we're leaving to find a doctor, and she passes out on the horse. She wakes up to Famine carrying her into a building, demanding someone help her. She gets laid into a bed, and she's in and out of consciousness as an old woman tries to help her and fix her as much as possible. This woman is not a doctor. There's no antibiotics, there's no technology. She asks if she's about to die, and Famine tells her not in his lifetime. We get Famine's point of view on how appreciative he is when she saved him all those years ago, and he thinks to himself that if their jagged edges got together, then they would make each other whole. She wakes up later to take care of business, and Famine helps her and cleans her up, then puts her back to bed. She feels worse. She tries to talk to him about her feelings for him, but he cuts her off and says, "You're not dying, so stop." She ignores him and tells him that she loves him so much and always will. And then he says, how about a new story? Because he does not want to have this conversation. He tells her the night that she saved him, while she slept, she said the angelic words for forgiveness. He then begs for her forgiveness. She says that she loves him and forgives him, and then falls back asleep. As she's sleeping, he confesses all of his love to her, and he can feel her slipping away because, again, he can feel life. And he understands why his brothers did what they did for the human women. He cries, and then he's like, oh yeah, I can help her.
I was gonna say, can he not heal her?
He's just feeling real emotional. He forgot.
Silly brain boy. Fart.
He places a palm over her wound and whispers, revive. He senses the bacteria in her, and it feels like it takes forever, but he eventually pulls it out of her body and brings her back. When she wakes up, she feels mostly healed, and she goes outside and finds him out there just like looking into the sky, and she asks if he helped her, and he says yes, and then kisses her. He tells her that he loves her, and they kiss again. After a couple hours, they are back on the road, and they stop in a new city, and he tells the people, if they want to be spared, that him and his wife need supplies and a place to live. And she's like, what? Whoa.
That's your husband.
He ignores her and tells them, again, we need supplies, we need offerings, and we need a place to stay, and I will not kill you. The people scatter to go do his bidding, and she's like, what the hell was that about? And he said, I'm gonna make you my wife. She says, not until I get three things, a real proposal, sex, and I want a lot of groveling from you. She's like, I want you on your hands and knees begging me.
I love that so much.
Fair.
As they're led to the accommodation, she wants to know how any of this is different, because it seems pretty much the same as all the other stops they've made. And he pledges to her that he will stop the killing for now. So she's like, wait a minute, that means that this is going to be like our house, and we're going to be living here for a while. And she's like, that's sexy. So she tells him to get everyone out of the house.
It's time to fuck. My gaze moves to his erection. Cocks are kind of my thing. I've seen hundreds of them. Fat ones, skinny ones, long ones, short ones. I've seen penises so small that I could barely fit two fingers around them.
Oh, scary. And penis is so large, they never fully fit all the way inside me, no matter the position. There were dicks that swung to one side and some that grew twice their normal length. There were some that were bulbous and fleshy. I mean, aren't they all fleshy? Some that were utterly outshined by their owner's enormous balls. And there was everything in between. Famine's cock is, like the rest of him, annoyingly flawless. Thick enough and long enough to make a girl feel thoroughly loved, but not overly endowed to make her regret it the next morning. His cock even slopes with just enough arch to hit a woman's G-spot.
Wow. Lucky girl.
He lifts her up and presses her against the wall and shoves into her. He tells her that he likes how she looks when he fucks her, and she says that she loves him, and he unleashes a bunch of plants around them to help get her off. Like, he's using, like, the vines to, like, stimulate her nipples and, like, rubber plant stuff. And she comes. He comes too as he tells her that again that he loves her. She notices the familiar flower grew around them, and he tells her that is her flower. They fuck in their new bedroom, and he eats her out multiple times a day for the next 2 days.
A generous man.
After he's finished on the second day, he's like, please marry me. And she says that she's actually really afraid to. And then he pulls out a ring with the huge ass diamond on it and asks again, and she says yes.
Okay, talk me into it.
It's been months and he's been waiting for the townspeople to turn on them, but they haven't. He thinks about how short Anna's life really is and how he still needs to continue his purpose, and he's super conflicted about this. He wants mortality, but he also hates his immortal body. He ultimately decides that she's worth it and hears the word forgiveness whispered on the wind. He doesn't want to forgive humanity, but he decides. Anna sees Famine outside and asks what he's doing, and he tells her that he's relinquishing his power, and then a loud boom cracks the sky. The earth does something crazy, and it feels like an apocalypse all over again until it suddenly stops. So it's like windy, thunder, lightning, rain, and then it just like stops as soon as it started. She looks to Famine and sees that he's full of fear, and he rushes to her and tells her that death is coming. She asks how, and he says that he changed. His brother has risen because he doesn't hate humanity anymore and chooses to be mortal with her. It's been a couple days now, and Famine can feel his brother circling the city, but he hasn't shown himself. Then he feels their whole town drop dead, every single person. So he runs trying to find Anna, screaming for her, hoping she's not included. He finds her unharmed, and he falls to his knees. She knows death has arrived, and he tells her to go hide while he confronts his brother, but she refuses to leave him. So he makes her her cage of plants and goes and walks away. She fights her way free of the plants and stomps to go find Famine when she sees death touch the ground and goes on high alert because he's looking right at her. Famine realizes his brother is there, but not anywhere near him. He realizes he's near Anna. He sprints to where he left her and finds her kneeling in front of Thanatos, and his brother warns him not to move. Famine tells him he wants what the other two got and to be with Anna, but Thanatos tells him, okay, for a price. The price is Anna. Thanatos will make him mortal, but she dies. Famine doesn't get to stop because he only wants to save one mortal. He needs to want to stop and save every single mortal. Famine tells him if he takes Anna, he will come for him, and then the earth starts to riot with another storm. Thanatos says, okay, I have another offer for you. Be with this woman and finish your task, and she will be the last human to die, but she still will die. She begs Famine not to do it. Anna begs him to sacrifice her and forgive humanity. Famine says, I don't pick either of those options. So Thanatos says, okay, and Anna falls dead to the ground.
No!
She dead.
Rest in peace.
He runs to her and cradles her in his arms, crying and demanding that Thanatos bring her back. He says, no, not gonna do that. I gave you two options.
I don't get it, though. Why does Pesty and War?
Is it because he's, like, the most brutal one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also because War and Pestilence decided that humanity as a whole was worth saving, whereas Famine is like, I only want Anna.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's trying to, like, convince himself that he cares about everyone, but he really doesn't. Famine sets Anna down and tells Thanatos he was not lying when he said that he would pay if he hurt her. He grabs his scythe and approaches him, swiping at him. Thanatos looks shocked and blocks his swipe with a wing, knocking his weapon to the ground. Thanatos has wings.
Oh.
The angel of death.
But Famine squares up, fists ready, and just starts beating the fuck out of him. After he takes a break for a second, Thanatos gives it right back and breaks Famine's arm, but Famine doesn't stop. He strangles him with his good hand, and just when he thinks that his brother is about to die, Famine feels his own life slipping from him. So, like, if he kills his brother, he also dies. He loses his fight and falls to his knees begging to bring Anna back. And Thanatos says, you know my two offers. And he says, okay, bring Anna back. So he picks Anna over humanity. She wakes to Famine cradling her and apologizing, and it takes a moment for everything to register, and she knows that he agreed to the deal. He tells her, maybe this will only be for a little bit. If he was swayed, maybe death can be swayed too. Thanatos approaches them, telling them, okay, go get started. Start killing everybody off. I'll see you guys when you're all finished. But she quickly grabs Famine's dagger and stabs Death.
I feel like that wasn't a good idea.
Famine is appalled, and she tells him that if Thanatos thinks they should all die, he kind of needs to know what it feels like. Thanatos drops to his knees, and she tells him, feels like shit, doesn't it? Thanatos whispers that stabbing him was not part of the deal, and Famine's like, you said this place wasn't fair. Welcome to the land of the living. And then they take off riding out of there. After they ride for a while, she asks where they're going, and he tells her to get his brothers. They need to end this once and for all.
Wow. Oh, I can't wait for the next one.
I know.
I think we're going to do Death when we open our third season in January.
We should.
Ugh, that's so far.
She said, I want to know what happens in now.
So we can announce now, I guess, and we'll announce a couple more times so nobody gets left out of the loop. But our second season is going to end the last Wednesday of October. We're going to take November and December off and come back the first Wednesday of January. And we'll come back with Death.
Yeah. With Death. Yeah. We're going to spend the holidays with our families.
Families.
Gross.
So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I think I give it 5.
There you
go. Wow. I think I give it 5.
And do you think Famine's sexy?
I do.
Would you trade places with Anna?
Yeah, maybe. But also sounds a little scary.
It does. I feel like she had it the worst out of everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She got stabbed 11 times.
She died almost 3 times.
Yes. I don't know if I want that.
And next week, we're telling Riley all about Made for the Alphas by Layla Sparks. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what this one might be about. The cover gives nothing away. So good luck.
It doesn't. It says, Made for the Alphas, Dawn of the Alphas, book 1. Fuck. It's got like a skull and I think like rose petals on the cover, so I have no fucking clue. But because it's alphas, I feel like it's gonna be like a pack of men in one. They're all gonna be like alphas, but there's gonna be this one that's like kind of the pack leader, and this girl is gonna somehow meet them and get in, mingle with them. And she's gonna be made for him.
Oh.
I think it's gonna be kind of dark, because the cover looks dark.
How about you look at how made is spelled?
Oh, fuck. So it's made like made.
Oh!
So maybe. I still think it's a pack of alphas. I still think it's like a pack of them. And there's gonna be like one leader alpha. She's going to possibly be, like, the maid in their house. And, you know, she's going to be hearing, like, what they're doing and stuff, their dealings. And then maybe she's going to get into it with them. And she's going to fuck one of them or multiple of them. But she's their maid.
Do you think they're, like, human, non-human?
I think it's a human book.
Okay.
I think this is going to be the best episode of the season.
Ooh, really?
I think so, too.
Did I get close at all?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got some right, some wrong. But we'll find out next week. It's going to be so good.
Yes.
Ooh, I can't wait. All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
Moro Casino. America. a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.